Hi, I'm Tamar Rodney, and you're listening to On the Pulse, a podcast from the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing. On this podcast, we take a deep dive into the experiences of frontline providers and researchers. We explore their insights and invaluable stories of how healthcare works in today's world. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Janice Taylor. Dr. Taylor is an assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing. Her research is focused on identifying and addressing disparities in pain in older women from underrepresented racial and ethnic groups and improving the quality of life and health outcomes in people aging with disabilities. And since March is Women's History Month, I can think of no better topic than how pain management and chronic pain are becoming an increasingly prominent issue among older women. Janice, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Wonderful. So we're going to jump right in. And I'd love for you to share with our viewers just a little bit about your background and how you decided to pursue research in this area.
That's a great question. So my background in research really came from clinical experiences as well as personal experiences I had seen in my life. You know, growing up, I witnessed my mother and my grandmother both age with chronic pain. My mother continues to age with chronic pain. And so watching them go through the struggle of living everyday lives, taking care of their families, working jobs, and still live with chronic pain, I think it planted a small seed in me that I didn't realize was there until I had the great opportunity to pursue nursing research. As I was finishing up my BSN program, I had a great opportunity to go to a research internship at the University of Texas at Austin over a summer. I thought I was just going to take a trip for the summer, but it turned out I fell in love with research, and that's where my research trajectory started. And within my clinical practice as a nurse, I often witnessed, you know, disparities in pain. And I worked in long-term care settings. I worked in women's health, and pain always was the number one issue that I struggled with helping my patients with, helping my patients really achieve pain management. And I never felt content sending them home, oftentimes still knowing that they were struggling with pain. So there were many factors that led me to this area. I really started off my research career, my PhD program, looking at pain in women with disabilities as a factor. I was really focused on disabilities and how women with specific conditions such as osteoarthritis moved into disability as they aged. But in that, you know, pain kept coming out. So I did a postdoc in biobehavioral pain research here at Hopkins, which was phenomenal. And then during that postdoc, I was able to interview participants from Dean Zanton's Capable study. And I learned a great deal about pain and pain management. And that's really all of those experiences got me to where I am today, doing research in pain management in older women.
Great. So tell me a little bit more about what that is exactly. What is your research look like today?
Today, I am currently working on two interventions. One is wrapping up, but that was my first intervention. As I had mentioned, I did qualitative interviews with participants from Dean Zanton's Capable study. Many people are familiar with Capable, as it goes into the homes of older adults to improve function. And it did remarkable things, not just here in Maryland, but now across the world. But I had the opportunity to interview them. And one thing I did learn about them was, although their pain had improved, they still struggled with different types of pain. So from those interviews, I really started to realize also that the women were battling mood. They were confined to their houses. They couldn't get out and do things that they wanted to anymore. So there was this dynamic going on with low mood or depressive symptoms and pain. So I decided to develop an intervention to address pain and depression with the women. At the time, my mentor, Sarah Zanton, had said, "Why reinvent the wheel?" So we took a study called Get Busy, Get Better, designed by Laura Gitlin, and it was focused on depressive symptoms in older African Americans in Philadelphia. So we took Get Busy, Get Better, and we adapted it using focus groups. and we developed an intervention to address pain and depressive symptoms among older African American women who had disability or frailty. We just finished testing that intervention and we learned wonderful things from it. We saw improvements in their mood and we didn't see huge improvements in their pain, but we're still going back to the women to see how they're doing now. But they met their goals that they set. So really this work is about them setting their own goals surrounding pain and depressive symptoms and helping them achieve their goals. They direct what they want their goals to be and a nurse works with them for 8 visits to achieve these goals. So that's really what I do is I develop interventions to manage pain for underserved, underrepresented women across the lifespan.
You shared with us earlier that part of your inspiration came from meaningful women in your life, your grandma and your mom. But we also know that chronic pain manifests differently in women. Mm-hmm. Why mm-hmm. is this? Why is it different for women as opposed to men? And what are some of the factors that might cause this discrepancy?
It's definitely a loaded question that we could probably talk for hours about. But I always say that pain doesn't discriminate. Unfortunately, people do. So we see discriminatory practices oftentimes in pain management, and providers have bias that they don't even realize they have. So that is one aspect of it where we see women have higher rates of undertreated pain. But as far as how it manifests, it's really a loaded question, and the research is mixed on that. What we do know is that women in particular have higher rates of certain conditions that are definitely accompanied by chronic pain, such as fibromyalgia, osteoarthritis, lupus, many other conditions that are more prevalent in women than men. So we do see that women are at higher risk for having pain. Another aspect of that is that women report pain more. It's hard to say women have pain at higher rates or women have a harder time managing their pain because we just honestly don't know as far as looking at differences between men and women. And if, men are reporting it, are we actually measuring it right? So even though I consider myself a women's health researcher, there is a lot of work that needs to be done in men as well. But also a whole nother layer to that is looking at the gender expectations that society places on individuals, cultural beliefs, values, different things all play into that. So it's really a loaded question. Pain is not simply just a biological experience that we can market with biomarkers, but there's so many things that are encompassing in a person's pain experience that we're learning more and more about. I can say that women have higher reported rates of pain and that they are at a higher risk of having chronic pain, especially as they age in comparison to men.
I thank you. And I think that's an important distinction to at least start the discussion. And although we don't have all the answers yet, but I'm going to make it a little bit even harder for you now. Sure. What does race have to do with chronic pain? Does the color of your skin determine how chronic pain affects your life?
Thank you for that. It's a great question. And it's very interesting how you look at that. One thing that I thought was interesting is I was doing focus groups with older African American women, and they asked me that exact question. They said, why do they always say that we have more pain? Is it true that, we have more pain? Pain is pain across the board. And that goes back to what I said earlier, that pain really doesn't discriminate. Every single person is going to feel pain at some point in their life. Not everyone may have chronic pain. But unfortunately, there are societal factors, there's social determinants of health that drive pain outcomes as well as pain management. And what we do see is underserved, underrepresented groups have higher rates of undermanaged pain. They're less likely to get their pain treated, and that's across the lifespan. Specifically, older African American women are less likely to have adequate pain management, as well as I talked about before briefly, the mental health component that's attached to chronic pain, higher rates of depression. They're also less likely to have mental health outcomes, as you know, Dr. Rodney, you can speak to that, but mental health treatment. And so having that cycle of not getting their mental health treated or their pain can just send them spiraling down, having it undermanaged and not being able to really live with quality of life. So it's not the race that determines a patient's pain experience, but it's the things in society. It's racism, it's classism, it's sexism, it's those things that really play into it. It's social determinants of health and not having access to healthcare or having financial strain that prohibit people from being able to get what they need to manage their pain. So there aren't biological differences between races that determine a person's pain response or even a person's pain experience, but there's social determinants of health that cause huge inequities, huge disparities. And I may be a little bit biased as a pain researcher, but pain is one of the main things that causes disability across the world. It's so disabling. And frequently, that's what we see people going to the ERs for. They can handle other symptoms, you know, for so long. Well, I can deal with this. They don't know if their hemoglobin A1C is high until it gets to a really concerning point, but they know if they're in pain, and that's what they go seek help for. And unfortunately, you know, not all providers are equipped to manage pain in an acute setting, or they don't have the time or the capacity of the resources. So you also see a taxed healthcare system. So there's many factors that play into that. I wish I could say that the color of your skin didn't determine the pain management that you receive, but unfortunately that's the case. Your disability status, your gender, your race, your sex, all of that plays into it. But myself and my wonderful colleagues were working towards equity in pain and not focusing on the inequities, but what can we do to change the healthcare system in the United States and frankly across the world to improve pain outcomes?
It certainly is a complex issue. And I think probably one of the more powerful statements you've shared with us so far is pain doesn't discriminate, people do. But yes, unfortunately, we have these discrepancies and these increased risk factors.
Hey, On the Pulse listeners, have you considered the DNP Advanced Practice PhD dual degree program at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing? Hear what this current student has to say about the program.
You get the DNP to implement evidence-based practice, and then the PhD in the research side of things really helps you to develop that knowledge and find new knowledge that is going to be beneficial to your patient population. So to combine those two together, you're decreasing that timeline from research to practice, which is about 17 years right now, which is too long. Being trained simultaneously in both studies, I think that's what's beautiful about the model of the DNP PhD, especially here at Hopkins.
To learn more about the DNP PhD dual degree program, visit nursing.jhu.edu/onthepulse.
You've also shared with us a few powerful studies which might be very popular. So we know about the CAPABLE study, the Get Fit, Get Busy, but you're also working on a new intervention called the DAPR intervention. Can you tell us more about what that is and what exactly are you doing here?
So DAPR stands for Depression and Pain Perseverance Through Empowerment and Recovery. We are in the process of changing the name of that study. But basically, I mentioned before, DAPR was adapted from Get Busy, Get Better. And it's adapted to address pain and depressive symptoms among older African-American women who live in the community. They're really an important population. Specifically, we look at Central Maryland. You look at older adults in a long-term care setting, and there are pain management concerns there, of course, but they have a nurse there who can treat them for pain, and they can call the physician for them in other settings. But when a person has chronic pain and they are sent home, even if it's acute pain that turns to chronic, they struggle with treating it. And particularly women who have higher rates of disabilities, higher rates of chronic conditions is why we developed this. So we took it from Get Busy, Get Better, which originally was a social worker who worked with older adults on depressive symptoms. We adapted it to have a nurse visit them for 8 visits and work with them on goals that they set surrounding their pain and depression. And we took evidence-based strategies, tailored them to the women and their environments, and worked towards those goals. For example, women asked, "I want to do things again." One woman stated she wanted to go to a jazz concert. So she had been in so much pain, she hadn't done that since before 2020. So one of the fabulous nurses on our research team worked with her, and she emailed after the study was over pictures of herself sitting at a jazz concert and said that she was able to accomplish that. The thing about this study is we address all types of pain. We took, you know, a really big chunk of pain and we said, we're just going to face it head on. There's wonderful studies out there that focus on low back pain or migraines, a specific type, but we decided to just go for the gold and address all types of pain. So the negative of that is we don't see the effects of our intervention right away. But as we're measuring later on, we see that pain improvement came later as the women practiced the strategies for weeks, even after the intervention was completed. But we did see phenomenal improvements with depressive symptoms. So we tried this in a pilot study of about 26 women, and we do believe it was successful. 95% of the women partially or fully met their goals that they set. And so we're writing a larger grant to expand this study throughout Maryland and have more women experience this research. So we're really excited about next steps.
I think you, me, and everybody who has potential pain problems are excited. That is remarkable results. And of course, we want you to continue to do that amazing work. But you said something that is quite striking, that you don't necessarily see results now and it's later. And what you're looking at is longer term effects. One of those longer term effects is allowing individuals to grow and possibly address their pain, but it becomes possibly an economic burden on healthcare. Yes. Can you tell me how chronic pain can create that burden? And is there anything we can do to slow that down?
It's very expensive for the healthcare system. If you think about chronic pain, physical therapy, pain medications, over-the-counter, prescribed, all of the things that go into managing pain, even the many, many ER visits that are driven by pain. So it's really takes a huge chunk out of our healthcare system. Pain management care in our healthcare system can cost more than diabetes and many other conditions. So it really is costly. You know, I wish I had all of the answers, but thank goodness there's many of us doing this work. But if we have interventions such as DAPR and other outstanding interventions, really will eliminate some of the burden on our healthcare system. If we can meet people in their environments, meet people in their homes, and really allow them to set their own goals surrounding, you know, what is it that I would like to do that I need to do in my own life, we will, I believe, see those improvements and we'll see decreases in the cost that pain is costing our healthcare system and our society. If we can give strategies, if we can find innovative ways to take pain care into the communities, I believe that will make a huge impact. And also, you know, there's a lot of work to be done for assessing pain in older adults who have dementia or even adults who cannot verbally express their pain. So finding ways to assess and address pain in various populations, even those who have disabilities, would make huge impacts.
A piece of this conversation, we could talk all day, but a piece of this conversation that you've just opened up is the individuals who help these individuals with pain. So as we have an aging population, specifically women, how can or their caregivers be better prepared to handle the growing number of individuals that they might have to take care of and those experience specifically chronic pain?
That's a great question. And in fact, I am working on a manuscript with great colleagues on looking at actual caregivers and their pain that they have themselves. So one of the important areas is addressing pain that caregivers have, particularly in women. You know, oftentimes nobody applies for being a caregiver. Life happens and you take on that role, right? So it doesn't mean that chronic pain stops because I'm a caregiver. So one of the important things that's overlooked and understudied is addressing the health concerns of the caregivers themselves. If they have chronic pain and all of a sudden they're a caregiver, that can be very difficult. As much as they love and appreciate the experience of being a caregiver, if they already had low back pain and they're helping their loved one out of bed each and every day into the bathroom to use the bathroom in the shower, that can be taxing physically, right? So it's important that we provide ways for caregivers to address their pain is one thing that we need to do, especially in women who, you know, can wear many hats. There's many women in my study who are caregivers and they're still working or they're taking care of grandchildren and they're doing this on a daily basis, living with chronic pain. And oftentimes you can look at them and think, they're not in pain at all, but they're really pushing past their pain each and every day. And we don't know how it's manifesting physically in their bodies. We don't know the stress that it's causing them, the wear and tear that it's having on their joints. So that's a huge area that I'm very interested and passionate about. I also think, you know, giving caregivers tools to assist their loved ones when they have pain. Oftentimes we feel like we don't have the knowledge or the tools to help, whether it's an older adult with dementia, whether they're caring for their child who had an injury or disability of some sort, being able to feel equipped to manage their pain in the home is so important. Or even if you're a caregiver of someone who's in some type of healthcare setting, such as long-term care, being able to recognize they're in pain. How can I advocate for my loved one to get the pain management that they really need? So there's a lot in that question, but I think there's so much work to be done as far as caregivers and women in particular in breaking down the barriers, the walls, providing education, providing resources, providing tools for their pain, as well as helping to take care of the pain of others.
Well, Dr. Taylor, I think pain has met a formidable research opponent. What started out as experience of pain has certainly put you on a journey where you're helping to provide real solutions for long-term outcome. And I appreciate you taking the time to join us and share your experiences and your expertise.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Wonderful. And best wishes with your research, including DAPR. And thank you to everyone for tuning in to this episode of On the Pulse. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with someone you know and subscribe through Apple, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. You can also find us on the Health Podcast Network at healthpodcastnetwork.com/nurse. Be sure to also check out our On the Pulse blog. You can learn more about the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing at nursing.jhu.edu.